know you're broken hearted.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other. Betty, I almost said welcome on in. welcome on in to We Love No Other, a podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am Robert Rosenthal, your host. Joining me tonight is two hosts from the boardroom, one of our podcasts, our basketball podcast. I actually had all you guys on, didn't I, to introduce like who you were
and we talked. Time, yeah.
Yes. So tonight I have Maddie and I have Johnny. And so we're going to start by, I just want people to maybe get to know these guys a little better. We've done this. I think I did this with Dan and we talked golf. I did this with John from the Field Pass and we talked football recruiting. Tonight we're going to talk football with the guys on the basketball podcast, but we're going to let you get to know you a little better. So we're going to start with Johnny, okay? Johnny, why don't you describe yourself to the studio audience of who you are and what you're all about?
For sure. So yeah, I would say amongst our friends and our fan base, I'm kind of like similar to Robert in that I'm very optimistic. And
you can
very...
say it. We share a brain, John. Just say it. Just say it.
We share a brain and like get frustrated about the same things, get excited about the same things. And I think it's partially because of my upbringing. So both of my parents went to Illinois and I like my first memories of like Illinois basketball were probably like 2003 team. So like freshman year, D Brown and like, there's pictures of me New Year's 2004 wearing a D Brown jersey. Then like
at age what?
At age 7 going on 8.
Yes.
As D was a sophomore. So then obviously my fandom was completely changed by 2005 and just like what that did in my brain. Also just like never giving up in any game or like walking away from games after the Elite Eight comeback. And then obviously having been an Illinois basketball fan, also following Illinois football, so seeing that Rose Bowl team. So then kind of meeting our other friends who, like Maddie, became friends or fans of the team in college. We kind of had like different set of expectations for like what Illinois is and who we should be. But then at the same point, almost like me empathizing with them with how bad it was, but at the same time, almost getting like more frustrated because when I was looking at schools, like my two final like choices were Illinois and Wisconsin. And for me, it was like, okay, academics, very similar. I'm looking to study business. And obviously like going to an in-state school versus out of state school, like financially it's a little better to go to Illinois. And then I'm like, well, also like I'm a massive Illinois fan. I would much rather like cheer on those teams and like screw Wisconsin. Right. Meanwhile, when we go to school, Wisconsin makes the national title when we're freshmen, they go to the Rose Bowl. They do all this fantastic stuff. And then it's just clenching the fists as Illinois, no winning football seasons and no tournament appearances. But
that's a
now game. In our post-grad years, we feel like we're finally like reaping the benefits. Maddie and I were joking too. We were like, it feels so validating putting up with all of the like the crappy performances over the years when Robert texts us that the Illinois football color analyst has canceled on him.
So naturally we're sort of second in command. I guess that makes sense. The pecking order here is the commenter and then is us. So yes. I think that makes a lot of sense that you kind of call on us here last second.
Love
which
it.
We appreciate.
Yes, love it. Okay, Johnny, let's talk about what we were just talking about before we started recording. We're recording this Thursday night. As we got on the phone here, he informed me that Ohio State just scored against, what's the score now, Ohio State, Minnesota?
45-31.
Okay, so we can rest assured. And so we had the conversation that in a game like this, I know a lot of people hate Ohio State, but in no way do I care if Ohio State wins or loses. If Minnesota were to win this game, I would hate life tomorrow. And so that's something else we share, and you share as well, Maddie, that it's – what did you say, Maddie? Is until we don't win the Big Ten?
Until we can't win the West, we can win the West. So
that's right. And remember, we could win the West all the way up until the Iowa game last year.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. Absolutely. So if Minnesota
we were
loses,
beating Iowa and we're like, yeah,
it's going to happen.
This damn thing.
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly.
So until we can't win it, we can win it. So that's my philosophy. So go Ohio State.
Love it.
I think a good analogy too, Robert, when we used to like evaluate us in Rutgers, like we talked about rungs on the ladder, right? Like when you're such at the bottom of the rung of the ladder, like we don't worry about the team that's playing in the college football playoff every year. Like in some ways, like Maddie and I have joked about it. Like we kind of like Ohio State to just like be the team everyone else meets their maker and loses to. Like it's yep. nice that they're coming for everyone else. So yep. we can kind of focus on just moving on up. When we play them in the Big Ten championship, like then that's our problem. But until then, like, let Ohio State beat Michigan and make arrogant Michigan fans upset. Like, let them beat Penn State. Let them beat Iowa. Let them beat Wisconsin. Yep.
There is, aside from when we play Ohio State, there is never an instance in which an Ohio State win isn't beneficial or just not a negative outcome for Illinois, I don't think.
Yes, totally agree. 100% agree. Okay, Maddie, let's go to you, and we'll just sure. we'll let you describe your fandom and people know the story of how, you know, us going to the Michigan State game and everything else.
Sure,
and
sure.
I've told that several times, but let's get into you, where your Illinois fandom came from, when it started, when it blossomed.
Yeah, sure.
How
so
hard
if,
it was.
If Johnny
to...
is if Johnny is the optimist, I would say I'm a little bit more of the realist here. So my journey to become an Illinois fan was a little bit different. I think I told this story on the first podcast. For the 05 Final Four, I was at a musical. So that's
yes.
where
yes.
that's where I was. Now, I have multiple family members that went to U of I, and so they sheltered me. Mm-hmm. They sheltered me from, I think, years of suffering and pain. And for some reason, I decided to subject myself to this when I entered the University of Illinois. And I think one of the biggest reasons why I became a 17 was because I didn't know what good basketball looked like. I wasn't around for the yep. good 05, 06 years. And so I like football.
Yep.
And if both of their programs are not that good, I'm going to default to liking the football team because yep. I like football better. And, you know, between you and I, Robert, this year kind of changed things, seeing what an actually good basketball team looks like. I'm yep. still in the 17. I still have my shirt.
Yep.
But I think that seeing what a good basketball team, what Illinois basketball truly looks like,
yep.
was really eye-opening for me. And so I think because I haven't really seen a ton of good teams, I'm a little bit more of that realist compared to Johnny. I'm like, look, until you prove it,
yep.
I've only seen a Heart of Dallas, a Red Box Bowl, a round of 32 exit. You know, I haven't seen it quite yet. And so maybe when Johnny's kind of floating a little bit too close to the sun, I'll probably pull him back just a little bit, just uh-huh. a little bit.
And here's what that. Here's what I will say in my defense and in Robert's defense is we're not the Illinois fans of the world who are saying every year we're going to win the Big Ten, we're going to win the Rose Bowl. Like,
yes,
I don't know about you, Robert, that round of 32 loss like hit me so hard, yep. like borderline depression, because it's like we had built up the season so much and like everything was riding on Io's legacy,
100%.
So that when it all crumbled, it was like I wasn't like, oh, I'm optimistic next year we're going to be great, or like at the time even worried about who's coming back. It's just like,
yep.
we had this golden opportunity sure. that slipped through our fingers.
Sure.
So,
no,
so there's like very... two sides of the coin of being like, we're going to be optimistic. And then when it fails, it hurts. And I'm sure you felt the same way with like, well, when Lovey didn't work out, like when
yep.
that was pulled from underneath you, it's like,
yep.
wow.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
I think it's just, it's a, until you do it, I haven't seen it before.
Yep.
So I don't know what it looks like. So do I have any reason to believe that it's going to happen?
Yep.
And you two have seen it a little bit in both sports, a Rose Bowl, a Final Four. I haven't seen any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I did see Oklahoma, though. That was a great musical. And so I just don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that looks like. And so I'm just a little bit more sheltered and a little bit more
yep.
skeptical.
Okay, so on the continuum then, obviously Josh is all the way over here opposite Johnny. Are you closer to Johnny, and then Sam is closer to Josh?
Yeah.
Or where do you guys fit in the middle?
I think all my sports teams are pretty bad, so I think that sort of helps with the skepticism.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Josh is on one end, Johnny's on one end, and me and Sam are kind of more towards the middle, I would say. Sam and I feel like have pretty similar opinions for the most part.
Yeah. Johnny, who would you rank closest to you and closest to Josh.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I feel like Maddie and Sam are like their own level of cynical in different ways. Like Sam being a Northwestern basketball fan for so long. Like, I feel like
you just drop that in every time.
Yeah. Yeah, you just can't not bring it up. So in some ways, he's like so tortured in that he rooted for Northwestern when they were terrible and then immediately goes to Illinois and doesn't see anything turn around. But I think because of that, because of at least like his knowledge of the Big Ten, I feel like sometimes he can be a little bit more optimistic about like, okay, that like Illinois historically at some point is going to regress to the mean of being like good at basketball. So I would say Maddie, on the other hand, who also, aside from being a White Sox fan in 2005, like has not really seen any success for any of his teams. Also being a Bears fan, so
he was not
say,
a Bears fan in '86. Can tell
so
you
I
that.
Would say he's reflexively like, okay, like this is not going to turn out well. Right. So I would say,
so I have that.
I would say Sam's a little closer on our side of optimism.
Matt, are you the only Sox fan? Is Sam?
Yeah.
Sam is
Sam's a huge Cubs. Those guys are—they're all Sam, Johnny, and Sam are, and Josh are huge Cubs fans. Somehow, I sort of fell into into the trap of apparently picking the wrong team here.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I hope you're squawking right now.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. But yeah, again, that natural level of kind of cynicism and skepticism is there. But that's going to make it more fun.
Yep.
When it does turn out well, because it's like, hey, you finally proved me wrong, and I'll be ready. I'll be the first one to celebrate.
Not if. But when?
When?
That's right.
Although, Robert, I feel like I had, after our loss to Loyola, had one of those moments that you had when you were, like, originally a Rams season ticket holder where you're, like, you kind of, like, take a second and you're, like, wait a second, like, what do I value? And for me, it's, like, wait a second, these college teams are so, the opportunities are so small with how short these guys are on this team, like, to me, it's like, okay, I need to like rethink about how I like rank the importance of these guys into my life, because it's like, like Iowa winning a national title would have just been so much more important than like anyone winning like a professional title because of just how much he meant to that program. So,
Yes.
It's an interesting one.
It sounds like, Johnny, you're still not over the Loyola loss.
I'm not. That's the thing. I'll never be over it, because I was telling one of my friends, like, what sucks about it is you, when you talk about Iowa's legacy, you just, you'll always bring up that round of 32 loss when you compare them to other guys. Like, the other Illini greats, the 05 team, they made the Final Four. The guys from the 88 team, they made the Final Four. And, like, one amazing thing about sports fans is, like, we tell the story of what happened to our kids. And it's like, I couldn't really understand when my dad was telling me, oh, the 89 team was better than the 05 team, and him saying, oh no, like you really don't know how good Kendall Gill and Nick Anderson were. And I'm like, well, no, Dee Brown and Darren Williams were the best things in sliced bread. So like, to me, those conversations, while there's no like actual winner, it's like a huge part of our fandom. So like, I was so upset that whenever you talk about Iyu Sumu, it's he made the round of 32 and we still don't know what his legacy is until, do we have a period of sustained success where like Iowa's the guy who started that, or is it, well, actually we had a good year. Then we don't know what the rest holds. Maybe Underwood takes us to being like a solid team, but not like early 2000s.
Yeah. I've always said that 87 losing to Austin Peay was, is the reason Ken Norman isn't remembered like Ken Norman should be remembered. Older people like me will tell you that, like, I think he averaged over 20. In fact, I think he averaged something like 20.1 points a game, which is what Iowa averaged this year. Like, Ken Norman was so good in 87. And the fact that that team lost Austin Peay is still, you know, still stings. But yes, I could keep going on that, and then we get on a tangent.
We're a basketball podcast.
Yes.
Hey, like,
yes.
You could talk.
I mean, you guys are basketball. I mean, I could talk about whatever I want. But we have a plan here. So let's get to that, because it might take a bit. So here's what. So Martin O'Donnell and I were going to record tonight, and he had something come up, and he couldn't. It's no big deal. We're going to do it next week or something like that. No big deal. But I wanted to record a pod, so I text these guys, and I'm like, okay, let's do something random. So I instructed them to come up with 17 football questions to ask me, and they had 1 hour to put it together. And so I'm going to turn the hosting duties over to them, and I'm going to be the guest. And so our, I don't know if, you know, I just picked the number 17 because it's kind of important to me. So I'm just going to let them ask the questions, and I don't know what they are, and I'm going to try and, you know, might be a 2-second answer, it might be a 3-minute answer, but we're going to try and get through 17 questions. So who's going first?
Johnny, it's our podcast. Johnny, you're going first.
He is going to ask one of the 17 questions. I had to put that in there by a shirt. Okay. Go ahead. I am all ready.
All right, let's do it. So you said in the preview, I'm going to wake up in a cold sweat tonight thinking about what UTSA tailback Sincere McCormick might do to us on Labor Day weekend. Are you still as concerned about our, like, after our performance on Saturday?
I'm less concerned just because of the run defense on Saturday. I'm still concerned because he's really good. And, you know, once Nebraska got behind, they obviously weren't going to go to the running game. They were trying to throw to or just let Martinez run to get back in it. So we haven't played that kind of game where they just hammer with a good tailback. Yeah, I'm still afraid of that, but not as much because defensively we looked much improved against the run. So, you know, in a big broad sense, I'm concerned with UTSA in the Illinois sense of what's the most Illinois thing we could do. Well, it's beat Nebraska and lose to UTSA, obviously. So I'm afraid just because of all my scars. But as far as the fears I had of McCormick 2 weeks ago, they're a little less because we looked pretty good against the run. Okay.
Fantastic. Hey, thanks for joining the podcast, Robert.
Hey, you're welcome. You having us on. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we really appreciate you taking time out of it.
I hear you had Martin O'Donnell lined up and then you picked me, so it's really great of you.
Last second, he's doing the boardroom, so we have to get someone else.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So I know you love comps. So can you comp UTSA to another non-conference opponent that we've played in football maybe over the last 5 or so years? I feel like it's kind of tough to get a gauge on how good this team is. They're in Conference USA. We don't really see a ton of these teams. We're a 5.5-point favorite. Can you comp it to a different non-conference game we've played?
Texas State 2014? 14.
Yep, 14, yes. Our freshman year, yeah.
Yes, Texas State 2014. I think UTSA is a little better, and we were obviously a little worse. Like, we looked pretty bad that September. It's surprising that was a bowl team because we were trailing in, I think, every game that September. Yeah, in fact, the first 5 games we won that year, we were trailing in the fourth quarter when we won. So, trailed in the fourth quarter of the first 11 games and went to a bowl. Just think about
it. Also, the longest game in Illinois football.
Yes,
the rain delay, which we really needed to regroup, because that's why I say that is because they were this, you know, they didn't have the biggest offensive linemen, they didn't have the fastest linebackers, but they were just really smart football players that were probably 80% from Texas and knew football in and out because they've been playing since they were 5 years old and just understood how to win. And it's that kind of little dangerous team that knows what to do. And if you get a couple quick receivers and you got a quarterback who's accurate, they'll move the ball. They're not going to bully you and they're not going to do anything else. So, yeah, that game got out of hand quick. And thankfully, because of the rain delay, lightning delay, I guess we should say, it's supposed to rain on Saturday. Maybe we'll have another lightning delay. So we are fully comped now.
Wow.
Wait, that was a night? Yeah, it stretched into the evening.
Yeah, it started in the day. Stretching the night.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a long one.
So, we are full-blown comp now. Rain, lightning, Texas State 2014, UTSA 2021. And let's hope we have a Dudek who can catch the go-ahead touchdown pass.
We'll get into the wide receivers later on.
Okay. Yeah, okay. That game does have a soft spot in our hearts, though, because that was our freshman year. So. Yeah,
let's see. That would have been the second game of your
second game. Yeah,
yeah, because Youngstown State.
Youngstown State. Okay. Yep, absolutely. Yes, good memory.
Okay.
And it's weird that we were just watching that game. Meanwhile, Mike Dudek, true freshman, other podcast host, was like the difference in that game.
100%. Yes.
But I digress. So last thing on UTSA, is there anything that we haven't covered schematically that scares you, whether it's, their passing game or maybe on defense?
I need to know, is this question three or is this subsection this is question two? Three. Okay. Okay. Anything from UTSA that scares me? This won't be the typical answer. With an opponent like this, and obviously I'm thinking of games like, I'm going to go before your guys' time, like 2002 San Jose State, like, let's see, the Northern Illinois game in 2010. These teams that don't have the same line strength and we can sustain drives against them, but they understand their offense well enough that they just connect on like pass plays. They just find a thing that works. That's the thing that scares me about this, is these teams know they're not going to beat you up and they know they're not going to, but it's almost like, okay, so San Jose State, again, before your guys' time, we lost to San Jose State in 2002. It's the game that kept us out of a bowl the year after the Sugar Bowl. And it was the nauseating game where they were something like 9 for 13 on third down. And it seemed like it was the same passing route on like 7 of the 9 third downs. And it's just this, why can't we stop this one thing kind of a game? Even Middle Tennessee State in 2015, that was that same kind of, like, this connection between this quarterback and this one receiver, I don't put three guys on him. Like, you know, you're facing, you know, we'll face Iowa, and it doesn't feel like that. It feels like they're trying to beat us up, and they do have good receivers, but they're not just running one route to one guy. These games scare me because of these little things that they just say, look, if we're going to beat the bigger team, we can't just go head-to-head and try and maul them. So let's do this really well, and let's do that really well, and let's see if we can stop it. So even something about them having a lefty QB just feels like one of those games, like Louisiana Tech or something like that, where it's just like, stop doing, like, that's annoying. Stop doing that. Stop connecting that 8-yard pass play so many times. So that's my feeling. Like, that's my worry with a game like this, is that an experienced team knows they can't come in and you know, dictate anything to us. And so they just find the little things that they can do well and just keep doing it over and over. And it always annoys me.
That's a great answer. I love that. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about Illinois specifically. We can kind of move off of UTSA. Obviously the big injury news was CJ Hart going down. He's going to be gone for the year. Do you feel better with Tariq Barnes and Kalen Tolson replacing him compared to maybe other positions? He played really, really well on Saturday.
Yes, 100%. I feel good, especially after what we saw from the defense. not only did they not go to three. Here, let me back up. In the spring game, we showed what I called a 5-2-4 defense. It was a 3-4 defense, four linebackers, three linemen. But the two outside linebackers were basically stand-up defensive ends the entire spring game. They just stood right on the edge of the line, lined up like defensive ends, usually rushing. They were 90% defensive end and 10% outside linebacker. So what we thought is like, okay, well, they can't stand that all the time. That'll stop the run against Wisconsin, but you can't have that defense against Purdue. They're going to just pick you apart passing the ball. Well, what we saw last week is it wasn't that they dropped a line, or they went, you know, dropped a lineman, added a linebacker to reshape things. They stuck with the two linebackers the whole time, and they went to five defensive backs most of the game, and then sometimes to six defensive backs, three corners, three safeties, and just one linebacker on the field. So in that sense, we can say, I think, after last week, this defense has two linebacker positions. We don't have to fill a depth chart with three starters and three backups. They won't really ever put an extra backer on the field as a third defender. If they bring on an extra guy behind the line and they drop a defensive lineman, it's going to be a defensive back. So because of that, it's basically two spots. And we had four guys going into the year, and now we have three. And so I feel pretty good as long as Tolson and Barnes are 100% healthy after their offseason surgeries. I feel good in the four people there. And Alec McCarron, who's the walk-on turn scholarship guy, as the fifth guy, now the fourth guy, he can play. And he, you know, I've pointed him out as a walk-on for years. So if this had happened at like cornerback, like if Tony Adams was the one who was down, it would be like, oh man. Like it's going to be probably Tez Nicholson, and I'm not sure who beyond that. And we, you know, then we got to start playing freshmen, and oh boy, if it's linebacker, it's like, okay, big loss. He was best player in the game on the defense. You know, he was the player of the game and won the team MVP, and he won Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week and all that. So it's a big loss. I'm not trying to say, oh, we're fine, but from any other position, pretty any position on the defense there at linebacker, to just go from four guys you can trust to three is manageable compared to what it might be somewhere else.
On that note, the other big kind of like injury from last game was obviously Brandon Peters. So assume Art plays this week, but Brandon's ready to go next week. How well do you think Art has to play to secure the job?
How well do I think Art has to play this week to secure as soon as Peters is healthy, he gets the job back? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I think Art could go 19 for 19 with five touchdowns, and Peters would still get the job when he's healthy. Bielma's very much the kind of coach who doesn't, he's kind of said it and he's alluded to it, and he's, I mean, this is not Rex Grossman's our quarterback, but like he has said before that like Peters is the guy and he's our QB1 and we got to get him back out there. And I think he even said it in the post game on last Saturday. So I don't think there's anything Art could do to, we're going to keep him on the field for a while and not go back to BP. Now, if they do go back to BP against Virginia and he throws two picks in the first quarter, they'd probably have a really quick hook. But, I don't think there's anything Art could do. I think quarterback-wise, my biggest, Art's had interception issues in the past. Say he throws two picks in the first quarter. Would they go to Ryan Johnson?
Yeah.
I mean, he said Ryan Johnson is three right now, so Ryan Johnson's two right now. So a guy striping Hardee's parking lots in June is now our backup quarterback. And if you're on the Slack and you've, you know, read some of my practice reports, the very first day of practice, I said, I don't know who this 17 guy is. Oh my God, his number is 17. Holy crap.
Oh my God. I remember too when you made that note where you're like, Ryan Johnson and Art are going to compete for the starting job next year.
Yeah.
And then the next note was like, you just reread that because I just said a walk-in. And that's exactly what I did. I was like, wait, did he just say Ryan Johnson?
Yes.
Although I do kind of have this fantasy of Ryan Johnson is our starting quarterback maybe like next year, throwing to Isaiah Williams and Marquez Beeson. Just like we have this.
And Deuce Spen.
Walk on quarterback throwing to these athletes who like weren't supposed to play wide receiver, who then just all decided to play wide receiver.
Yep.
That would be a real fun one.
Yes. As I said in the preview, I'm so ready to write the Kurt Warner story. You just take out the, you know, again, that's when I was super Rams fan. So you have to understand in 99, like Trent Green was going to be the future, and the Rams, after four losing seasons to St. Louis, were going to be so good, and that was going to be the moment. And then Trent Green goes down with a ACL in the preseason. And it's like you're so devastated. And then you hear that the backup is a guy who was stocking shelves at the Hy-Vee and all this stuff. And then he becomes a NFL Hall of Famer. So, yes, I'm ready for that Illini story. Ryan Johnson, Def Leppard, I'm ready for it.
I love it. So let's talk a little bit about those wide receivers then. I want to know now after the first game what your expectations for a wide receiver room are. Do you have a guess on what Deuce's impact is going to look like down the line? And I want to know if you're actually surprised by Isaiah Williams' contributions. I think when you're on our podcast, I asked you who's going to lead the team in receiving. I think Isaiah was like maybe third yes. On your list. And
yep.
So does that change? Does Saturday change any of that?
It does. I was very surprised. I don't know how much of that had to do with Hightower being out. Hightower has, you know, they seem to really like him in the spring, and they talked about him a lot, and they talked about him a lot this summer. And so I was thinking it was going to be Hightower, Navarro, and Williams as the starters. So with Hightower out, I'm not sure if they then increased what they were going to do with Isaiah, but I was very surprised. And yes, if I could do that, I would amend it right now. No, I still think there's going to be like a, you know, we're going to tune in on Saturday and Donnie Navarro is going to have 113 receiving yards. And we're like, oh yeah, right, Donnie. I do think I would amend that. They are really emphasizing getting the ball into Isaiah's hands, and they were able to do it. You know, like that, the biggest surprise to me was that one, the catch Williams had on the near sideline where he kind of got tossed by the guy, you know, thrown backwards.
And then he comes right after
just pops right up.
Starts talking smack.
Yes. You know, that route I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting to get space on the corner to where they could throw that long thing and he's open. So I saw that and I was like, oh, well, if that's in his arsenal here and it's not just jet sweeps and little curls over the middle, then this is going to be a little different than I was expecting, and different in a good way. So, yes, I was very surprised. Now, Deuce, gosh, I mean, you know, as much as Bielma talked about how they had just done that, they had just made the move to get him on the field and they put in a route for him kind of thing. So, I think that'll be a work in progress. You know, I could see them, if Beeson is healthy, playing Beeson more than Deuce at some point. Like, you know, I think it's a novelty kind of thing at this point. But he is a crazy athlete, and he, you know, that's why I wanted him as the quarterback in a dual threat scheme, because he is as fast as you can be, and he is so athletic, and so that's why I nearly lost my mind when he caught that pass.
That was probably the most fun part of the game, was looking at the number who caught that, because I was right in front of us when we were at the game. It was like, is that number six?
Yes.
Deuce Span? I turn around to the strangers behind me. I go, hey, by the way, you guys know that's a quarterback that just caught that, right? This like older lady. She's like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, at first I thought it was Tony Adams. Like my very first reaction was, wait, six? Tony Adams is? Hold on a second. Was that Deuce Span?
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't know what was happening at first, and I should have. I mean, last year I sat there watching Deuce on the sideline to see if he was going to come in. I should have done that this year. I saw him warming up the receivers, and I put that on Twitter at the time. You know, but yeah, I mean, I would love to see it. He's a crazy athlete, and I would love to see more. But gosh, if he moved there last week, it's going to be an adjustment.
What was wild about that play too, though, was like he was arguably being like interfered with by the cornerback. Like
yes.
Classic, he was Johnny. Pushing him out of bounds.
If you've ever watched a football game with Johnny, he's doing the pass interference on every play
in the stands.
Yes. On the stands on every play, he's getting that's a hole. That's classic.
Does Johnny do the throw?
That's where my
does he yeah. like on the yes, yes,
100%.
Okay.
Got
to
move the arm up. Yes. That's my Carmen part of the fandom, is that is calling for the fight. But I agree, Robert. I was saying this to Maddie and Sam yesterday, that I was really surprised by like Isaiah's route running,
yes.
given how little he's played the position.
Yes.
But then I was saying, well, I guess I should have realized that given he's such a quick athlete, but his footwork was just so good. And that's the exact same play where it's like, okay, he's getting separation on that sideline, like, the sky's the limit for him. The only thing that might hold him back is like being a deep threat. Like he doesn't have Tyreek Hill speed, but like he can do a lot of things.
Yes. Yes. Okay. What question are we on now? What have we reached?
All right. I think we have gone through six so far.
Okay. That's not bad.
Or seven. We've kind of been moving around here a little bit.
Okay. That's not bad. That's not bad.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Go ahead.
Okay. So on the opposite note, what were you most surprised by in Ryan Walters' defense? And if you had to make a depth chart, who are the starters in the back five and what exactly are the positions?
My biggest surprise was Dime. We have not done Dime. I know we didn't do it under Lovey. I don't think Banks did any Dime defense. And by Dime, I mean six defensive backs.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I mean, you know, a couple Hail Marys or we're in the prevent and we'll put on six defensive backs. But I cannot remember a Dime package besides that kind of, you know, third and 53 kind of freak play kind of thing. Like, I don't remember a Dime package at all in the last 10 years. So that was the biggest surprise. I asked the question because I couldn't even tell. I asked Walters on Monday at the press conference, like, do you have names for some of these positions? Like, it looked like you had four safeties out there at times. And he confirmed, he's like, no, it's just three corners and three safeties. And when we put in a Dime package, which had me thinking, well, then was Eddie Smith at corner then when he came in? You know, like, so I started doing the math on all that. But yeah, I think against any spread team, I think we can now say after 1 week that the base defense is two down linemen, two stand-up ends. So they're still outside linebackers. They're still standing up. They can still backpedal straight on the snap. They don't have a hand in the dirt. Two linebackers, and then five defensive backs. Even on the starters that they printed and put out on Twitter from the Illini stats account, in the starters they had Quan Martin as a starter at what they're calling star. And that was the same terminology that was used years ago in other defenses for, at the time it was kind of the safety kind of playing linebacker was the star kind of thing. But in this, it's kind of half safety, half corner, take the slot receiver guy, and that'll be Quan Martin. So I think, you know, the interesting thing will be so if you're starting three safeties, one of them called star, and the three safeties this week starting were Kirby Joseph, Sidney Brown, and Quan Martin, then the question is, A, Derek Smith played most of the second half over Joseph, and does that mean Derek Smith is the starter there? So are the starters Smith, Brown, and Martin? And B, when they bring in the extra defensive backs, who, like, in the, you know, are you calling that guy a nickel? So you have a nickel and a star, so you have three safeties and three corners. I don't know how they're working that. What is Eddie Smith in that? Is he a corner? Did they switch him up and move him to cornerback? And, you know, and then the other thing is, as I wrote on Sunday, like, you know, I kept, like, making little notes in my notebook and, like, trying to draw it out and, like, okay, is it six defensive backs and what's this and this? And then I just got to the point of, like, wait, does it matter? Like, I don't know if it even matters. Like, oh, he's a safety, but he's a corner. I mean, no, he's a defensive back. I don't know if it even matters if we need to label this or say what that is. It's just, it's going to be 2-2-2-5 is what I'm going to call this defense now. Two down linemen, two stand-up linemen, two linebackers, and then I guess two corners, you could say that, and then three safeties is how this thing's going to work, and it's going to be interesting to watch.
Positionless football, baby. I love it.
That's right.
One of the most fascinating things I thought was the running back rotation, going through five guys. I don't know if that was a heat thing with it being like 100 degrees, trying to keep guys fresh, trying to just figure out what your rotation is going to look like, the guys you've got on the roster. But barring injuries, what does your ideal running back rotation look like? Do you keep it at five? Do you trim it down to maybe two or three? What's that going to look like?
It's a great question. I don't know. Like, we have seen some coaches. Okay, I'll go deep on this one. So Lou Tepper was run one running back until he falls apart. Robert Holcomb once had 49 carries in one game for only like 113 yards or something. Like, it was like, you know, I don't know, it's probably more than that. It was like probably 140 or something, like about 49 carries. So other coaches have liked rotations. You know, Zook always seemed to like kind of three guys. You know, even when he had Halsey, Thomas, and Richard was the kind of third, you know, change up back, and then Daniel Dufresne was that guy. I don't know this, but it seemed like on Saturday that he really, that either Peterson or Bielma or both of them really like keeping everybody fresh and giving people a series. Like we saw it in, like the drive where Love was running well as we were trying to run clock. Love only got four straight carries and then they pulled him off and put Hayden in, which, you know, tells you like, okay, four carries might have been the hit on the last one where they saw him get knocked a little bit, but it might have been, you know, I feel like that was maybe a little hint to, okay, if they like all these guys, nobody's going to get winded. It's just keep rolling them in there. And even though Love is running well, okay, let's roll with Hayden. Okay, let's get Epstein back in there. They just kept, you know, roll. And then, oh, Chase Brown's back in here in the second. Oh, wait, he's back out. Oh, Love's back in. You know, I just think they believe in fresh running backs. And if they have a stable, they'll keep going to them. So, yeah, I think that's something we're going to see. I think, you know, when you see Jakari Norwood be the second tailback off the bench, it was like, wow, like this is not what I expected. And I'm guessing, you know, part of that had to do with Chase Brown's injury, but part of that had to do, okay, well, that little pass out of the backfield, Norwood's probably our quickest guy to catch that and go and get to the pylon, so let's go with him. So I really do think they're going to be like, okay, need tough yards here, go Hayden. Okay, we need a workhorse, let's go Epstein, you know. They might just keep doing that all year. So it'll be really, really interesting.
Yeah, we were interested, too, to see, like, who our short yard running back is going to end up being. Like, obviously, you would think it might be Chase Hayden just because of his size. But at the same time, Maddie and I were saying, I'd still probably rather have Chase Brown running there. Or given, like, how strong and fast he is, or even, like, an Epstein. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, Bielma said something today. Or was it Monday? It was today, I think. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. He said, yeah, there's a couple freshmen. We kind of wanted to get in the game and we didn't. And then this week of practice, they've been pretty good. So, you know, you're going to see a couple freshmen that you didn't see last weekend. So then I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Is that Josh McCray as the third down back, you know, 245 pounds or whatever he is? You know, is it this? Is it Pat Bryant's going to get some catches? Is it Sed McConnell's going to get in? Is it DJ Johnson? They really seem to like him. Is it, you know, so is it a defensive back? Is it Keontae Curry? Is it Tyler Strain? So that will be interesting. He said something like at least a couple or two or three or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see who they do turn to. And maybe it is Josh McCray to, you know, third and one, you know, bulldoze ahead and get a yard.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess we can all agree the running back room, good depth. When you take a look at, say, other position groups, should we still be concerned about depth as far as our expectations for the year? So maybe, like, Nebraska game might raise our expectations for what the season is, but it didn't really, like, our depth wasn't really tested too much, I guess, other than Art and our linebackers coming in. Because, like, one thing I always think about is you compare who started for us week one and then who starts for us against Northwestern. Like, there's always just so many injuries over the course of the year. So, yep. Should we maybe lower our expectations because of the depth that's still there?
I mean, I think you're okay. You know, let me just run through everything real quick. Quarterback, I think Sitkowski proved you have some depth there. We don't know what Ryan Johnson would give. You know, last time he played football, it was at, you know, D2 Northern Michigan in the Upper Peninsula. Running back, plenty of depth. Wide receiver, depth, but you don't really know if it's any good. Wide receiver is a concern if there are injuries. Offensive line can go two more, and then injuries get really concerning. They, you know, Tony Peterson even said this week he has seven guys he trusts, and that would be, you know, Pearl and Bedovinak plus the guys who started. So that's okay, seven is fine for offensive line as long as you don't get crazy injuries. Tight end, you're fine. Barker, Ford, They got a lot out of Tip Ryman. They played Max Rosenthal some as a blocker, so I think they're fine there. Defensive end is a concern. You've got Seth Coleman plus Gay and Carney. Ezekiel Holmes is the fourth guy, and then I don't even know a fifth defensive end. So I don't even know who it would probably be. Bryce Barnes, who moved there this year. Sorry, I'm saying defensive end. It's offensive linebacker. Defensive tackle, that's a concern. Quentin McCoy is gone, so they now have 8 total scholarship guys there, and that includes Virtus, who didn't play and, you know, is trying to relearn the position in this defense. So, you know, they only really played 2 down linemen, but it's still you're going to get to freshmen pretty quick there. So that's a bit of a concern if there were injuries. Linebacker we talked about, that's, you know, it's really awful to lose Hart, but there is Tolson and Barnes who provide great depth. Corner, flashing red light, warning light, please stay healthy, Spoon and Adams. I said in the spring I love Taz Nicholson. Like, I really like him in that class. I think he made a couple plays on Saturday that were really
big
impressive.
Yeah.
And so I'm a fan of Taz, and you know, he's pretty good. But beyond that, I don't even know who would. I guess Kendall Smith would be the fourth corner. Maybe that's why they're moving Eddie Smith there. And then safety is okay. They have options, and they played pretty well. But I mean, we've seen Kirby Joseph get beat the last 2 years, and we've seen. You know, the last half gave up on Kirby Joseph as a safety and moved him to wide receiver. So there are, you know, there are concerns with Derek Smith against Wisconsin last year. Concerns. Sidney Brown had some of his worst games his third year last year. That's a concern. So any injuries there, I'm concerned as well. So does that? Let's see. Corner's the biggest concern. Defensive end, outside linebacker is probably the second biggest concern. Those are the positions where we got to stay healthy, because it's pretty thin after the starters.
Let me ask you a question about Brett Bielema, sort of shifting away from the players here for a second. I want to know who the last coach is that you've been this impressed with one game week into his tenure, and sort of a follow-up to that is, does this week 0 performance sort of change your outlook on your sort of hard and fast rule about coaches going into year one?
You're going to hate my answer. Get ready to hate my answer.
Bring it on.
I mean, okay, look. So Turner took over a total, complete mess. And there was just no, I mean, they went 0-11 Turner's first year, and they just, you kind of even knew it in camp. Like, that team really had no, they had lost 6 straight to end the previous season, and it was ugly and bad, and you just knew it was going to be bad. Zook surprised with his very first, a big comeback. I think there were 18 points down to Rutgers and won his first game, and that easily was probably number one because of how they, you know, came back from so far down, and we weren't supposed to be good, and then suddenly we win and everything else. Now, that became a 2-9 season, so we can't really exactly point to that as anything. But here's why I said you're going to hate the answer. Like, in Beckman's first game, they played Bill Cubitt's final Western Michigan team, handled them. The defense looked great. And it was, you know, the defense gave up 1 score, but it was nearly a shutout. And so this is the week before the awful Arizona State loss, where we looked completely confused and lost, and the rest of the season was bad. But that, like, if I remember, like, the line in that Western Michigan game was really close, and we played well and blew them out, and we had just lost to them in 2009 or 2008. So, you know, it was that was still fresh in our minds, kind of thing. And so there was this kind of similar feeling with Beckman after week one of, like, oh, that was a solid performance. Now, in everything from when he was hired to when he reached that first kind of dominating win, it was rough. And obviously Beckman was, you know, had the media gaffes, and the fans were, like, really questioning things, and recruiting didn't really start on fire yet, and so there were still concerns. So I'm not saying this is that.
I'm just saying this compares to after week one of Beckman. It was like, wow, that defense is solid. They're still good. They were good last year. Looks like we're going to be good this year. This really could be a season. And now we look back on 2012 and be like, okay, that's the year when we had one offensive coordinator calling second down and the other one calling third down, and you know, all the disaster games that happened and 45-point losses and everything else. So all of that to say, I still remain cautious, but as far as hitting all the right notes and the fan base being excited and playing a game where Nebraska was the team fielding punts at the two and roughing the passer and every other mistake they made, and Illinois was the team that played smart, sound football. I can say it's been a very long time since I said that.
Cautiously optimistic. Mm-hmm. Johnny's like, no, we need more optimism here. Like, we're going to Red Bull.
We'll talk about it later. We've got a closeout question that might cover some of that. Okay. Another thing, like, how surprised were you by the push by our front four? I mean, to me, there were a few guys that stood out. And on the flip side, are you concerned about our O-line struggles?
If you asked me in the first quarter, like at the beginning of the second quarter, I've been like, oh man, like the offensive line was supposed to be the strength, and this is they're getting. But yeah, then it started to click and started to roll. I think of anything, I probably felt the best about line play on Saturday, just because the defensive line did not get pushed around. I mean, how many games have we – look at Nebraska 2 years ago, where they have 700-some yards. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and that was this same offense, and that was Martinez. So for the defensive line to not get manhandled, for Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton, who are both technically freshmen, to play that well, it was like, oh, hold on a second, we've got something here. And then on the offensive line, you know, that drive in the third or fourth quarter or whatever, where they just kept running behind Gerasotti and Velo, and it was just over and over and over, and it was like, wait, we got something here. And that's, you know, one of Nebraska's strengths was their defensive linemen. They have some solid linemen. So, I was. Again, don't do this to me kind of thing of like, okay, don't show me that and then screw up, because I'm going to start getting really excited about what this line play can be. It was a very pleasant surprise on Saturday after the offensive line's first quarter struggles to really get rolling with that.
And do we think – you might have mentioned like Podobiznak and Pilstrom weren't being subbed out for each other, but more like kind of going in and out. Like Pilstrom didn't get benched is what you were saying.
Yeah. At first I thought they went four series with Pilstrom and were like, okay, he gave up. He must've given up those three sacks or something like that. They must've gone, just said, okay, got to go to Podobiznak. But then Pilstrom came in. It was almost like first quarter Pilstrom, second quarter Podobiznak, third quarter Pilstrom, fourth quarter Podobiznak. It wasn't exactly that, but that's kind of how they did. So when they opened the drive in the second half, the eight-minute drive for the touchdown, the 75-yard drive, that was Pilstrom again. And he played well on that drive. So that was kind of this, okay, they see they've got multiple guys. It's a hot day. You know, they brought in Pearl for Paulcho at times. And so – I just looked at it as like, okay, and Peterson kind of confirmed this on Monday. Yeah, we've got seven guys. We think we can play them all. If a guy needs a breather or a guy is, you know, a little nicked up or whatever, we feel comfortable, you know, putting all these guys in, and we've got an extra guy on the interior and we've got an extra guy on the exterior, and we can do that. So, I think they don't mind subbing out, some linemen when they want to keep them fresh, which is not something Lovey's staff did. That's not something Rod Smith did. It's not something Garrett McGee did. They were basically pick five linemen and run with it.
It was interesting to see that, like, the running back rotation almost, like, keeping guys fresh here. Yep. You don't see that with the line.
Yeah, I feel like you would see that in a non-conference game, but to be that a conference game, that's, like, the utmost important. It worked.
Surprised, and it worked well. So,
all right, let's ask some, like, hard-hitting questions. I feel like these questions have been really easy so far, Robert, so let's actually get some really hard-hitting ones out.
Okay, I'm ready.
I've been obsessed with looking at how many followers teams, whether it be pro, college, have on Twitter. Okay. Like whenever I see a team on Twitter, I'm always like, how many followers does this have? Like, how many do I think they have? How many do they actually have? I've just been obsessed with it. I've been on sort of a secret mission, I haven't told you, these last couple of weeks to get Illinois football to 100,000 Twitter followers before kickoff. We were at like 99.9, going right on 100,000, basically going into the game. And I checked, we added like 700 or 800 followers since the win. I know you kind of monitor sometimes with like the social media interactions on basketball, how we're like consistently top three. Is this something that you share a passion with alongside me, Robert? Or could you not care less?
I do. I think it's a great sign of the strength of a program. And I love that Northwestern only has so like 33,000 followers.
Let me check on it right now. Give me a prediction. Your prediction
is somewhere in the 30s now, right? Like, they used to be in the 20s.
It was so great. At NU Football Family, by the way. It's not Northwestern. Oh, it's at NU Football Family. They have 45,600.
45,600? Damn it.
Yes, 45,600.
How dare they almost be half of us after dominating us for 15 years.
Yeah.
Yes, I really do that same thing. Like, it always kind of makes me angry when I see Iowa's followers. Even Iowa basketball's followers makes me angry. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it's a little different per program. And, like, you know, some programs, like, put all their stuff on Instagram to where they have, like, way more Instagram followers than Twitter. You know, every school, every conference does it a little different. But, yes, I think it's a great sign of what a program kind of has and their importance to see the number of followers.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think I quoted it when Lovey, who started a Twitter account when he got the Illinois job, passed Fitzy in like 9 months or something like that. Just from 0 to 60, he passed him when Fitzy had like a 10-year head start. So, anyway, neither here nor there. I like to look at it to just again prove to myself that Northwestern does not have a fan base. You know, if we ever think they do, or like, oh, they've been good for so long, I bet they're gaining fans. They're not, and it just is never going to happen. So give it up. And two, I just like seeing like where we're at and what we kind of need to be, or even like seeing what Minnesota has or anything else, like teams, Purdue, like teams that have been kind of down around us. I remember looking at Minnesota's official Twitter account followers and how they spiked during their 2019 season. And so, yeah, I think it's a really good barometer of where you are as a program. And
Purdue is at 101.7.
Yes.
Purdue. I think Minnesota is a lot more.
Yes. We were ahead of Purdue for a bit. And then when they had their Rondale Moore years there, when they had their couple 6-6 years or whatever, they hopped over us. But now it's time to take them down.
Yeah,
Indiana's still at 96,000, so we're still beating them. Yep. And once they inevitably fall back this year, fingers crossed. I guess we're technically rooting for them against Iowa.
Yes,
Big Ten West.
Did you see the stat? There was some graphic that one of the Athletic writers tweeted today, where they did like the fan confidence meter, and they were just. I think they polled fans. All their writers kind of did it for, you know, to go to the fan base and say, how optimistic are you toward this season? And it was like, you know, Illinois fans were 79% optimistic or something, and Louisville fans were 45% near the bottom or whatever. Indiana was 100%.
Those poor people.
Do they know the win expectancy of that Penn State game? Okay.
Yes.
Their hearts and dreams are about to get crushed.
I know what happens when I say things like this. Indiana's going to, you know, what, they have 23 interceptions in in seven games last year or something stupid. You know, it'll probably happen again, and they'll think they're good again. And look, they're a lot better than they've used to be. But you play that season again last year, and you take away just a few of the interceptions, you know, the weird deflections in games, and you take away a 100 different things. Yes.
That could have gone either way.
Yes. You take away a whole bunch of things, and that's just a, you know, they would have gone 3-4 instead of 6-1 or whatever they went.
Sure.
So, yes. So, those 100% optimistic fans, I do have a very you poor people feeling toward that.
And get ready for when you're 1-2 after you've also lost to Cincinnati.
Yes. Yes. Now they're going to be 3-0, Johnny, and we're going to eat these words, and somebody's going to throw them back in our face, but that's fine. That's fine. As long as they stay below us on Twitter followers, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed.
Yep.
Yeah, kind of in a similar, like, little off topic. So we had 40,000 fans, but the concession stands were unbearable.
The lines were brutal. The lines were absolutely brutal. I went to go to the bathroom at halftime. I was going to get some water because it was like 96. And it wasn't. I had to choose between either hydrating or going to the bathroom, and I chose just going to the bathroom, which was maybe not the best decision. I was seeing stars in that second half as I was yelling. I was like, I need to sit down.
It
was just unbearable. So, yeah, I guess just do you have like a 10-step plan to improve concession efficiency if we start selling out games so people don't miss an entire quarter and a half?
I tend to think, I just have always had this in my head, that on a really hot day, that concession stands go nuts just because people are trying to get liquid. And so even though, you know, what would normally be 13% of fans are actually going to concession stand, or whatever the number would be, suddenly it's 64% because people are like, I'm dying out here. It's so hot. Mm-hmm. I just need a water. I just need, give me something. So that is my gut feel toward that. It is related to the heat and not to that they didn't have enough stands open or whatever. Now, I don't know that to be the case. But yeah, I mean, I know they base it on, you know, how many employees and everything else on the ticket sales. And so, yes, I'm not concerned. I think a lot of times that's tied to somebody go get me some water. I'm dying here. And I think it will improve as the season goes on. It gets a little colder.
That's probably fair. Yeah, the lines were just
brutal. I've seen them.
I had to make a survival mode decision there of which one I wanted to take care of.
Yep.
And I didn't want to miss the game. That was honestly the most the mitigating factor there is I'm not going to miss the game.
And did you miss the 8-minute drive or anything?
No. I got back in time. I waited like 15 minutes. I made it like 12 minutes for the water fountain.
Yep.
Instead of like a concession line, got back just in time.
Good.
And I have no regrets over my extreme dehydration.
Good. Okay. Excellent. I'm glad you didn't pass out.
Yeah.
Okay. What question? What question number are we on here?
We've got like four more, I think. Okay. So here we got four more. So I want you to give me your kind of back to the actual game. Give me your like extreme overreaction of like this underclassman or this transfer played out of their minds, are really great on Saturday. They're going to the league in 2 years.
Deuce Span. I'm just kidding. It's not really. It was one catch. I mean, but let's be honest. He's averaging 45 yards a catch this year. Let's be honest.
Heisman Dark Horse.
He's
amazing.
Let me think here. I mean, the first thought that comes to mind is Taz. Tavion Nicholson. Like, I don't know. You know, he played in one game last year. I've liked him in practice. They seem to like him. Anytime you change a number, they put him in the number 10. Like, they changed the number the week of the game. They took the 10 away from Joriel Washington and gave it to Taz. A lot of times that's like, okay, he's one of our guys. Let's get him in a number that's not going to conflict on any special teams and all that kind of stuff. So, he's the first overreaction of like, oh, he played well and they trusted him. And that makes me feel a little better if one of the corners goes down, because I wasn't sure who that guy was going to be. And if they like him and he's, you know, he looked like this in this game, then we've got a future here. Overreaction on offense. I mean, the obvious thing to say is Isaiah, that like, okay, well, hell, he's going to get 10 touches a game and he's, you know, 120 touches this season. But I don't want to pick the easy one. overreaction on offense. We have two quarterbacks. Like
both
if,
of them.
If we have to go to the backup, it's not like, you know, like it's not the trouble that we were in the past. You know, just after throwing that pick, which I believe was Sitkowski's first throw, right? Like he handed off seven times and then threw the pick, but was rough. And so it was like, ooh. But then what, 12 for 15? And I was trying to do this when I was on Check the Tape. Of the three non-connections, one was a drop pass by Williams. One was batted down at the line.
Which would have been a huge play.
Which would have been
easy first down.
Easy first down, kept the drive going. And the third, I wrote this down, but it's not coming to my mind right now. So it's not like he had, you know, it was just like I tuned into a little bit of Ohio State and Minnesota tonight, and I saw the pick that Minnesota had in the second quarter, and there was just a blatantly didn't lead him at all, threw it way behind him, and, you know, we didn't see any of those throws on Saturday. So that was like, oh, wait, you know, if Peters comes back and he's inaccurate, I don't think they'll hesitate to go to Sitkowski. Now, one game, we'll see what happens this weekend. You know, now Art has to be the guy. But, yeah, that move to get him from Rutgers was it's really paying off already.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so the staff obviously enjoys keeping their opponents in the dark, not showing anything, being completely different from the spring game. How much of the offense and defense, like percentage-wise, do you think we've seen? And do you think that, I don't know, Walters is going to be more focused on going zone against certain teams because he seemed like going man-to-man a lot?
Well, I think Missouri was number one in man-to-man last year, and so I think Walters does like it and will stick with it. I think we haven't seen the run-heavy defense where they'll play three down linemen, two stand-up ends, and, you know, really crowd the line, maybe even bring a safety up, eight in the box kind of a look. We haven't really seen that side of the playbook because Nebraska didn't really line up and try and, you know, Iowa or Wisconsin us. So we've still yet to see that. You know, I felt like we saw most of the package on offense. You know, if you read Craig's scout of, you know, kind of what Nebraska's defense would do, and then he talked a little bit about, you know, even on the podcast last week, he talked a little bit about Tony Peterson when he was the offensive coordinator at Louisiana Tech when we played him in the bowl game in 2014, you know, of how he mixed things up and did that. And that's kind of exactly what we saw from the offense of how they went about it. So I don't know if there's a whole bunch of tricks up their sleeve that we've seen the basic running game packages and we've seen how they'll try to use their receivers. So I'm more interested in seeing the different looks on defense and, you know, how they'll adjust and how they'll adjust to Hart not being there because he was, you know, basically they know what defense they were going to put in. They went out to the transfer portal and said, we need a linebacker who can do this, this, and this. They found him. They played him. He was player of the week, and now he's out for the year. So, you know, so that's going to be a little different of now they have to adapt the guys they have to fit that role of what they wanted him to do. So it'll be interesting. But, yeah, I think we've seen more of the offense after 1 week than we've seen of the different things we'll try on defense.
Our penultimate question here is in regards to time of possession. You spent a lot of time talking about time of possession, game management. Personally, I don't think there's a lot of things that are more satisfying in watching your team, your football team, than seeing them grind down the opponent when you're up a possession, two possessions, three possessions, and you can just watch that clock tick down, tick down. You know you don't need the ball back. You know you're just trying to grind clock. We've seen that a lot of times on the other end where, like, an Iowa team is just, you know, up 10, 12, and they can just salt the game away, and it's painful sitting there watching the clock go down, knowing we might not have another possession. So given all that, give me like an adjective to describe how satisfying it was to just dominate the time of possession, just watching us be up, you know, two possessions, three possessions, salt away the clock, you know, first down, another 3 minutes, another Reggie Love 9.5 yard run, first down. Talk to me about just like an adjective for that.
Yeah, I started as that drive to open the second half just kept rolling. You know, we have access to like a live box score in the press box. So I immediately started like composing the tweet that I, you know, I shouldn't say this because people are like, that's a jinx. You can't, you know, I just started writing, you know, if we scored, it was going to be a 75 yard drive. So I put on, you know, I put in the tweet there. I'm starting to compose. And then I just put X plays, X yards, X minutes, you know, because it was just like, oh, what's the phrase? Imposing their will on Nebraska right now. They are just saying, look, I mean, you know what we do now. You tried to adjust at halftime. We're going to just keep shoving it down your throat. And then to end it with a pass to Ford was almost like perfection, you know, third and goal and this and that. You know how I get random thoughts in my head. I had such a great tweet in the second quarter. Oh, God. This would have been so good. Okay, you probably won't get it at first. You guys are probably too even young to understand why this was a great tweet. We're driving and we have third down. This is when we scored to tie it 9-9. So who scored that? Was that Epstein scored on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. But we had a 3rd-and-7 or something like that. We had it in the red zone, something like that. So I was thinking that it was about to be, we're going to kick a field goal and be 9-5. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie 9-5 or if you've heard the Dolly Parton song 9-5.
Know the song.
But I typed up the words, what a way to make a living. And I was just going to tweet that once it was 9-5 and it was going to go viral and it was going to be
so
great.
Viral, yeah.
And so
kids are listening to Dolly these days. I think they would have liked it.
Okay. So this is the thing. So we score that touchdown and had a little, you know, this is my ego talking here. I was a little disappointed. Like, yeah. Oh, couldn't we just kick that field goal? I got a great joke to make.
We still probably would have won. Yeah,
we would have still won. They would only needed a field goal on that final drive instead of needing the touchdown. But yes, I scolded myself minutes later because come on, let's be serious here. It's tied, and that's what I really want. But I really wanted to tweet, what a way to make a living.
Yeah, this is like press pass Robert talking to us now. The media guy who's like, oh, I just care about this story. I don't
That's
care
right.
about
it. That's right.
They just want a good game, need something to write about. Absolutely. There's
That's
no
right.
cheering up there, but there is rooting for storylines.
Yes. Yes. Don't worry. I quickly got out of my mood and was back. You know, I actually went down to the stands in the fourth quarter just and paced. Paced around the balcony. Just I can't stand still when we have a lead and it's starting to slip away and I just want the clock to zero.
And making some amazing bird noises in the from the stands. We were making those noises on the drive home. Just
I would like
you
to know.
Okay.
Yes. slight bruising, but it's okay. Did you see the Kofi video today that Chester Frazier put, I think, on Instagram that was playing Jenga? I would like to note that in that video, Kofi makes the exact same sound I was making in the stands. Kofi and I are brothers in sound effects. I don't even know why I was doing that, but somebody said I was making bird sounds, and that's exactly what Kofi did today.
Maybe he heard you and was just like,
He's like, oh, that's cool. I'm going to add that. Yeah. When I'm playing Jenga, I should go. Brrr.
Yes.
Okay. That's...
We have made it. We have made it to our last question. There's no one better to ask this question than Johnny. You know, this was like the first question I think that he thought of when we were putting this Google Doc in. It's like, okay. I saw his eyes light up. He goes, I know what I'm going to ask for this last question. So take it away, Johnny.
Okay.
All right. So Robert, if we beat UTSA and Virginia, why can't we start 6-0 in a season?
We can, Johnny, and we will. Yes, if we win at UVA, I told Carvin the other day, like, if we win that one, it is I take every, you know, the, I've said I have the little mental notes on my bathroom mirror of my memento tattoos of like, do not get excited. Do not. I strip all those sticky notes off. I am full blown, full go. This is happening. Why not win the Big Ten West? Why not get ranked by October? Why not, you know, all of it, all of it. And so, yes, I am staying reserved. We're, you know, I saw, like, I was pulling up, I used the Score app for, like, checking scores. So I was checking college football scores. And since, you know, Illinois is one of the favorited teams, it puts that, you know, our box score at the top or whatever. And it said the line was down to 4.5. Is that true? I mean, that's what, to me, that's what my app said, like, 3 hours ago. And I don't know what they're using for that. But that has me a little like, okay. So here I am saying these things, and it could be like after beating Rutgers in 2005 of like, guys, we could win 7 games, and then we won 2 games. So I will still dial it back if none of this happens, but if we do start 3-0, I am in full-blown 1999 mode. When we won that game at Louisville, I went from this team will never win a game again to – it is possible to win 8 games this year. 100%.
Like it's 1999. I love
it. Was that the Micron PC Bowl year?
That is, yes.
All right. We will see you guys there. Yes. And who did we play in that Micron PC Bowl?
Virginia. Thomas Jones.
What a way to tie it together. Uh-huh. Unbelievable.
That's right. Unbelievable. Okay. Gentlemen, thank you for your questions. I appreciate you pinch hitting tonight. I'm glad we got to know you more. And I know I don't make predictions until the SOC, but you guys can. So I will end with how you're both feeling about Saturday. Johnny, go first.
Johnny, go ahead, Johnny.
You know what? The eternal optimist, I was a little nervous reading Craig Scout. Just it seems like UTSA can kind of scheme their way offensively into some points. Like, they don't need a huge push from the line to just do kind of quick things. But I still think that we're a Big Ten football team. We just beat a team, Nebraska, that I think has like 23 4-stars on their roster. And I'm confident in our coaching staff. So I'm going to throw out a score prediction of maybe like 27-20.
Okay. All right. Maddie.
I know everyone is viewing this as the Joe Price revenge game, but I'm actually not as concerned about that as I think other people will. I think you talked about how our defensive line, our front four are going to get a good enough push on McCormick to probably stop him enough where they can force their quarterback to throw the ball. And give me Illinois 27, UTSA 19.
Wait a minute. Did Johnny say 27-20 and you said 27-19?
Give me 27-19.
That's awesome. Now yeah. I want Sam to walk in the room. I'm like, I think it'll be 27-21. I love it. Okay, gentlemen.
I do think I was the only one of our friends to predict a win against Nebraska, though. So
yes.
Did say 23-20 for that one. So
this guy right here did not. So he needs to recalibrate. Okay.
Thank you, Robert, for having us. This is a blast.
I appreciate it. See you guys.
Yeah. I love.